Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. Since its inception in the summer of 1949, the Air Force Medical Service has sought to provide service members and their families with first-rate health care and benefits anywhere and at any time. In support of deployed forces, the AFMS also plays a central role in the most effective joint casualty care and management system in military history, a system that has saved thousands of lives that otherwise would have been lost on the battlefield. With us this morning to discuss his leadership in this area is our very special guest, Lieutenant General Bruce Green, Surgeon General of the U.S. Air Force. General, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Also joining our conversation from IBM is Brenda Dixon. Brenda, welcome.
Thank you.
General, our listeners are very familiar with the U.S. Air Force. They may not be as familiar with the U.S. Air Force Medical Service. Could you outline the mission and history of AFMS? How has its mission evolved over the years to support DOD's overall mission?
Well, the Air Force Medical Service was established about 2 years after the Air Force was formed, July of 1949. In fact, we continue with pretty much the same mission as we started with, to support air, and at that time, it was in its infancy, but space operations. We lost a lot of the space operations in 1958 when the NASA actually stood up. But the reality of our mission has always been for the Air Force to fly, fight, and win, and for the Air Force Medical Service to enable them to do that by creating health within our military force, and also to try and restore health whenever someone was injured in any way. And so as you look at what our various missions have been, setting up hospitals and deploying our medics to somewhere far away, what's happened over the years is we've also picked up an air evacuation mission, which is a little broader than the Air Force because we also use air evacuation to bring back casualties from all the services. And so I'd say that right now the Air Force Medical Service critical mission in terms of what this country relies upon us for is for the air evacuation. But the reality is there's a whole lot of links that go in there, and we're still pretty much focused on winning in air and space. And the newest mission over the last 10 years is winning in cyberspace.
General, with such a broad mission and an important mission, would you provide us with a sense of scale of operation? How is your office organized? What's the size of its budget? And how are your personnel deployed across the world?
I have immediately working for me about 42,000 active duty and civilians, another 8,000 reservists, and approximately 6,000 guardsmen that are functioning in the medical missions. To support all of those folks, I have a budget of about $2.6 billion in defense health program funds and another $2.5 billion in personnel accounts. We use those dollars not only for the readiness mission, but also to provide health care for about 2.2 million beneficiaries that are Air Force beneficiaries. The total for the Defense Department is 9.5 million beneficiaries. I have about 1.1 million of those beneficiaries actually enrolled to care within my system.
What about your official responsibilities as the Surgeon General of the Air Force? Could you give us a sense of what they are, and what's a week in the life of a Surgeon General?
Well, my daughter, when she was six, kind of summed my life pretty well. She said, when asked what her dad did, I thought she'd talk about being a general, or I thought that she'd talk about being a doctor, and I was waiting for the impressive answer. And the impressive answer was, my dad goes to meetings and answers phone calls and does email. The reality is I work in a policy world, and so basically working with others to develop policy and find new ways to do things is pretty much what I do most of the time.
That sounds actually very interesting. In that role, what would you say are the most important challenges that you're facing today?
Well, obviously, we always try to keep up in terms of maintaining the cutting edge in terms of our deployed medicine, our readiness mission. The secondary thing I would tell you is, in order to do that, I have the responsibility for training and equipping those medics so that they're ready to do that. And that involves trying to maintain state-of-the-art medicine back here at home. And no less than those two is the third mission, which is really to ensure a healthy force. And to do that, I have to basically leverage the very best in primary care to try and make certain that we are helping our beneficiaries stay healthy so that hopefully they don't need our assistance when they go overseas. Those are the challenges, and those have been the challenges probably from the beginning. And there's just some unique ways we're trying to do that now.
I'd be curious to hear a little bit more about you personally. I suspect that when you joined the Air Force or became a doctor, you weren't thinking, you know, you were embarking on a life of meetings and email. You were thinking about becoming both a physician and an officer. What attracted you to that kind of a dual life, if you will?
Well, I was young when I came into the Air Force. In fact, it took a waiver for me to get a commission because I was only 18 when I actually took the oath. The reality is that I'd finished high school a little early. I finished college actually a lot early, got my degree in chemistry in 2 years. So I was 18 years old, had been accepted to professional school. I was thrilled. That's what my dream had been. And my father pointed out that because I'd done it so fast that my other brothers were right behind me to go to college, and I probably should consider taking a scholarship with the military. I wasn't too excited about that, I'll be honest. But his words were prophetic. He said that he thought that I would do well with a little structure in my life. And here I am some 36 years later, still kind of applying that structure that I've learned so well. I chose family practice because I really liked the challenge of what was going on. I went to school in Milwaukee. Basically, when I came in the Air Force and finished my family practice, I thought I'd do my commitment and get out in 4 years. I was a very young physician. I came in at around 22 out of medical school, finished the residency, and did 4 years out delivering babies, delivered 400 or 500 babies in various states, and then kind of got involved because I was doing well clinically. They asked me if I would supervise other physicians, and I became a chief of hospital services and ultimately became a commander of hospitals. And the rest, I guess, is history as I've gone through various periods in my life, I guess. I went through 4 different hospitals that I commanded, the largest of which was Wilford Hall. Somewhere in there, I also was the command surgeon for various major commands, probably the most interesting of which was out in the central command area where I was basically the CENTCOM surgeon. And got to travel with the 4-star and meet the heads of multiple countries as well as the ministers of health, et cetera. And the most exciting time I've had in the military was my time in the Philippines, where I kind of finishing some work at Harvard in public health, I went out to the Philippines and suddenly became an expert in disaster operations after the Baguio earthquake and the Mount Pinatubo volcanic eruption. I found myself doing some amputations under buildings, doing a lot of public health. I suspect that my career in the Air Force was sealed at the time I did that work because it was too exciting to walk away from. But I have done a lot of different jobs in the Air Force. If you ask me what the most valuable thing I've done in the Air Force, it's probably the current AirVAC system. I was at Air Mobility Command at the outset of 9/11 and saw some things to come together and took where we were and built a system that's getting our casualties back in 3 days. We found ways to leverage equipment and critical care personnel to bring people back safely much more rapidly than what they'd done in the past. And I think when all is done and I finish my career, I will look back and say, although I had fun in the Philippines with disaster operations, I probably really made a difference when it came to moving casualties back to the States.
General, as you reflect on your training and career, both as a physician and an officer, what are the characteristics of an effective leader in an increasingly interconnected and networked world?
From my perspective, I think you have to be very attuned to the people. I think that you have to know kind of where they're coming from. When you're looking for innovation in particular, you have to bring teams of very talented individuals together and listen to what they say, hopefully leveraging their experience to find new ways of doing things. I find that when you bring people together in an environment where they feel safe and can talk about those things that are a little different or they wish was different, that we can make kind of remarkable things happen. More often than not, I find that I create a common vision for folks. I get them to come in and share their ideas, and then I leverage the information that they share so that we can create something new. And it's worked for me with small hospitals and modular capability. It's worked for me in disaster operations. I will say that in disaster operations, I'm much more directive. But the reality in terms of trying to find new solutions is to get people to feel safe, to build trust, and then have everyone take pride in the final solution set that you're able to put out.
But what about the success of the Air Force's aeromedical evacuation capability? We will ask Lieutenant General Bruce Green, Surgeon General of the U.S. Air Force, to share with us when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.